Hello, 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 everybody, and welcome to the Dr. Football Ultimate Patriots Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Dennis Tien, recording tonight 1 hour commercial-free on the New England Patriots and the NFL. And yes, Patriots fans, that was another Christmas present for you all this Sunday in the Meadowlands. Thorough ass-kicking by the Patriots of the New York Jets. Joining me to break it all down, as always, the CEO of Hedgebetter LLC, Justin Fine. Justin, my man, you're fresh off your country Christmas in Nebraska. What's going on, dude?
Fresh off a country Christmas. What a, like you said, what a Christmas gift, right? I mean, you know, I think two things. I think, A, we all thought New England was going to beat the Jets, right? I don't think there's anyone who doubted that, but the manner they came out and did it in was thoroughly impressive. I think even against a bad team. And then too, you know, I think we were all planning, we all figured that the Patriots, barring anything drastic, should have the AFC locked up. But I think we were all planning that it wasn't going to be till the end of the year, right? We had another week to go to wait, and we got a little early Christmas miracle. Eagles beat the Bills in Buffalo yesterday, and that's all she wrote in the AFC East.
That's right. Your AFC's champion, New England Patriots. And like, you know, for years, I don't know if we appreciated these division titles because, you know, when you win it like 17 out of 19 times or something, you know, you grow to not appreciate it. But I think after the last 4 or 5 years this franchise has had and this team has had, this is a sweet thing to win the AFC East title. I think people do appreciate this.
100%. I mean, look, you know, it was, you can say it wasn't the longest period of downtime in New England. I mean, I know, you know, 5-6 seasons, whatever it may be, a lot of organizations out there have been waiting a lot longer to get themselves, you know, in a place of contention. But I think what's surprising to us is, you know, just how quickly things went from 0 to 100 between last year to this year. And you know, I think for us Patriots fans, it was a very nice reminder that, you know, if you just do some simple things, coaching, quarterbacks, et cetera, you know, you can really turn a franchise around.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And they have made it really a remarkable and amazing turnaround. And, you know, it's not always about the length of time between the division titles, but I think sometimes too a little bit about the ugliness. And this was just an ugly situation here, I think, the last couple of years, with kind of Belichick kind of on his way out, and then this mess of a transition to Gerard Mayo. And, you know, like we all, you go back to 2019, 2020, we all expected this whole thing to continue as long as Bill Belichick was healthy and able to be the head coach of this team. And just to have the experience of this kind of just completely falling apart the last those 5 or 6 years, to the point where now Belichick's out, you're moving on to Mayo, he's in way over his head. And it just was like a total disaster. And then to recover that in 1 year, nail the draft for the quarterback, the most important position in professional sports, nail the coach, and just hit so many other draft picks and players in free agency in the draft, one of the best drafts arguably in franchise history this year, 4 or 5 starting players. It really is a remarkable turnaround.
Yeah, very, very remarkable turnaround. And, you know, I think this team really, they set out the season, obviously, you know, with the goal of winning the AFC championship, right? We heard Vrabel say that at the beginning of the year. We want to be playing home playoff games and winning home playoff games. You want to be back on top in terms of the division. And, you know, when he, to your point, when he announced those goals, it sounded like it was more of a long-term plan, right? It sounded like something that was going to come to fruition over the next couple of years, maybe 3 to 5 years. And to be in a position where it's already locked up before the end of the year, the AFC East, we got a home playoff game coming where, you know, got one of the best records in football in a position for the number one seed in just such a short time frame. It really is something to be proud of.
It is. And, you know, I think back to when we did our NFL preview episode and we went week by week when the schedule came out, I should say. And we went week by week. And I think we came to like 12 or 13 wins. And we're like, well, there's no way that's going to happen. They're going to give up a few that we think they're going to win. And the truth is the opposite happened. They actually have won several games that like we yep. didn't think they were going to have a chance. And, you know, and that is a little bit to do with good fortune. But you know, like Cincinnati, at Baltimore, at Buffalo, we penciled those all in at losses
right.
and they actually turned into wins. So, you know, when we went that week by week by the schedule back in May, whenever it came out, and it's like, oh man, we come to 12 or 13 wins and you just feel like that is impossible for this team right now. And the reality is they're going to exceed even those, you know, the most optimistic of projections. They've already won 13. They probably will win 14. It's hard to believe that this happened so quick, but it did.
It did. Yeah, it did. And, you know, I mean, again, you don't want to go back and dwell on, you know, some of the losses they've had this year. But this is a team that really, for all intents and purposes, should have won pretty much every game in their schedule, right? Like, yep. you know, the second Buffalo game they lost, that was in their grasp. They should have won. You know, they beat themselves against Pittsburgh. Week one against the Raiders. It's crazy now looking at that two-win Raider team and thinking one of those wins was against the Patriots, right? So, I mean, this is a team that really could be undefeated right now. And it's, you know, you could obviously go back with any team and you can nitpick and say, oh, well, they should have won this game. They should have won that game. But this team really has gone above and beyond in terms of what they've been able to do.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And you know what, Justin, this team is not the same team that they were back in September when they lost two of their three games. You know, I think it's a very different team. I mean, you go back to that week one game and it's hard to believe they lost to the Raiders. I mean, the Raiders right. are a mess. They're pathetic. We sat here after that week one game and we said, Pete Carroll, coach Mike Vrabel,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, and now just look at how far everything's fallen in Vegas. Pete Carroll looks like he's going to be one and done. Vrabel's a candidate for coach of the year. It's amazing that the progression this team has gone from September to now. And it really is just a credit to the whole franchise. I think I want to start, Justin, and kind of kick it off with what I think the lead story is from Sunday, which is like, if you're a Patriots fan and you just got the greatest Christmas gift in the world, because we've been sitting on this podcast all year and saying that there is two things we needed to see from Drake May. And one of those things was he needed to have a signature comeback because he hadn't had one yet. And the second was he needed to come out and have that game where he just beasted on someone, yeah. you know, even if it was a bad team and had four or five touchdowns and just had that kind of game. And really in back-to-back weeks right around the Christmas season, he now goes out and does both those things consecutively. I think, Justin, I think people need to understand about Drake May. He has not hit his ceiling yet. No. He has gotten better this year. I mean, we went back to the beginning of the year and I said many times, he's the best player on the field. I'm talking about Pittsburgh, Carolina, some of those early games, Miami, even when they weren't doing that well. So you can tell he's good. He continues to get better. He continues to improve. And I really feel like, you know, we are really now seeing elite quarterback play from him, you know, without question. And maybe he even put himself back in the MVP race a little bit with what he's done the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not out of the question. If he goes out and he does something, you know, similar to what he did against the Jets, against Miami, Patriots find themselves in the number one seed. I think at that point, it's a really legitimate discussion because, you know, you can look and say that, well, you know, there might be a couple metrics that Stafford has him beat at, but look, May's got him beating a couple metrics. And if he's the number one seed and has the best record in football, you know, that's going to be pretty tough to ignore. I mean, the Rams, you know, we said last week, we thought they were going to wind up at the number one seed. It's looking like now that they're all but guaranteed to be a wild card. I don't think they're going to be able to win that NFC division out there. So, yeah, I think Drake May is very much still alive in the MVP race.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think Stafford's going to win it.
I do too. I do. He's still the favorite. You know,
and there's a lot of reasons for that. But I think that May has put himself, yes, back in the conversation. And Drake May will get votes. And yeah. I wouldn't say it would totally shock me if May won because, yeah, Stafford's throwing 10 more touchdown passes than May, 40 to 30. That's a big thing. That's true. But at pretty much every other statistical metric, May actually has a beat, including QBR and quarterback yeah. rating. May leads the league in both of those.
Yes.
Which are quality metrics. It's not just about volume. And if you look at like what Stafford has around him and what May has around him, you know, I mean, that's a compelling argument in favor of Drake May.
I totally agree. He's doing a comparable job with less around him. 100%.
Way less.
Yeah. Way less around him. And look, I mean, you know, to bring it back to this Jets game this past week, I mean, this team, you know, as dominant as they looked in, you know, as well as they played, they're still missing a lot of key contributors on both sides of the ball, right? So this is a team that's going out there and they're now winning games without some of their key guys. And I think this actually speaks to something that we had talked about earlier in the season where we were worried that this might not be a deep team. They might lack some depth, right? It might be a top heavy roster. And we wondered when they get injured, can they withstand those injuries and can guys step up? I think this team is sneaky a little deeper than we thought they were in terms of, you know, what they can bring to the table when guys get out and, you know, are injured.
You know, you might be right about that. I mean, I said for the last two seasons, both 4-win seasons, I think the team was a little better talent-wise than we realized, right?
Right.
And to give you a good example, you look at guys like Vidarian Lowe and Ben Brown, who've come in and actually been really good on the left side of this line. And I think a lot of the struggles of a lot of these kind of medium, bottom-level players on this roster did tie back to the coaching, Belichick and everything that happened at the end with him. And then, of course, Mayo, who was just a terrible head coach. Right. And I think now that you see these guys, a lot of them, they're coming in and they're getting good coaching. They're being put in the right positions, good schemes, you know, good coaching around them. And the results are just so much better.
They are. Yeah, they are. This team has been very, very impressive, I got to say. And you know what? Like you said, I think they're still peaking in terms of their capabilities. Not just Drake May, but I think the entire team, to be completely honest.
Can I give you a name of one guy that I think is actually still getting better?
Is it Ramondre?
No. Well, yeah, him for sure. How about Stephon Diggs?
Let's not forget absolutely. That.
You know, back-to-back 100-yard games for him. This is a guy coming off an ACL that didn't miss a game. And I don't think he was 100%, even though he has been a big contributor all year. And now, lo and behold, we're late in the season. I think you're seeing him look a little more and more every week like the guy that he was in Buffalo or Minnesota.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, that catch he had in the first quarter, you know, where he quote unquote mossed the guy. I mean, that's vintage Stephon Diggs right there, right? That's big playmaking ability. And that's what you need in this roster. You need guys who can go make big plays. He's becoming more consistent, more reliable as the season goes on. And even just the way he's moving and the way he looks out there, he looks healthy. The beginning of the season, he looked like a guy who was coming back from an injury.
You know, honestly, I even said last week against Baltimore, I thought he looked a little ginger at times. But I mean, really, if you think about it, from where he was early in the year, it might have been better. And I think he looked better this week than against Baltimore last week. I thought he looked faster.
Yeah.
On Sunday.
Yeah, he did.
So that's one example of a guy that's still getting better.
100%. And I think, you know, if he's someone, especially now that you lose a Mac Hollins, you know, who's been eerily reliable at times this year, you know, it's even more important that you got guys like Stephon Diggs who can step up and bear the brunt of the offense and take control. And you know what? I mean, not just how well he's played, but the amount of targets and receptions he's getting now too. You know, he's getting volume. Before, I feel like he was like a drop in the pan at the beginning of the season, a flash in the pan. Now he's consistently getting that volume that he deserves.
100%. If he evolves even close to a number one receiver as he regains his health, like coming down the stretch, that's like adding a trade deadline acquisition or something.
Yeah, definitely.
So all that said, I do have to say that, you know, as much as this was an impressive win for the Patriots and they looked amazing, and I'm sorry, like, there is no way that one NFL team should be that much better than any other NFL team. I don't care who it is or how bad they are, unless that second team quits. And, like, the Jets outright quit on Sunday. And I do wonder if what we saw Sunday was more about the Pats being good or the Jets being pathetic. The truth is probably a little bit of both. But, dear God, what a pathetic franchise the New York Jets are. I mean, we keep saying it over and over again. I think that, you know, Justin – I mean, I made a joke, but I'm only half joking, that they should be relegated to the XFL. I mean, that was not an NFL team that was on the field on Sunday.
No, no, they're, I mean, there's really not much you can say about them. They've obviously quit, right? They've thrown in the towel. They're going through the motions. They're just trying to get to the offseason at this point. And this, look, they're starting a third string quarterback. Their defense has been eviscerated through injury and trade. They have no receivers to speak of. I mean, this is just a team and a coach that I think a lot of people are starting to question his validity as a head coach. Like, this is a team that is truly just playing catch up this year. And I think you're right. I think part of it is they've quit and they're just, look, they're showing up, they're getting their game checks, they're getting ready for a nice little offseason at this point.
The lack of talent is one thing. There's no question that Jets team lacks talent. They're beat up. The Patriots are beat up. That was about a team that has quit, has lost faith in their coach, and has completely quit, completely mailed it in. And I'm sorry, that is a bad sign for Aaron Glenn and what he is attempting to build there in New York. I'm telling you right now, Justin, the Jets are going to have a top pick in the draft. They have several extra first round picks from the Sauce Gardner trade. They are going to have the draft resources to bring in a new quarterback. And they are insane if they don't bring in a new coach. Cut their losses with Aaron Glenn, bringing a defensive coach that has lost control of that locker room, that did not do a good job back with your rookie top five draft pick quarterback, is a recipe for disaster. It's better, learn from the Patriots, cut the cord and just start new.
Yeah. You know, personally, after halftime, I'm not even gonna lie. I stopped watching the game. I tuned into Red Zone. I checked out some of the other games. At that point, it just gotten so bad. I saw what I needed to see. Patriots steamrolled in the first half. Drake May looked good. Everybody looked good. And there really just wasn't appeal to me to check that second half out.
Yeah, there really wasn't much that you really missed in that second half. The only thing I think you missed was maybe like one of those quintessential Jets moments, which was, you know, the Jets, I'm sure you heard about it, the Jets running the fake punt and getting it and then going three and out right after that and then running a second fake punt. I mean, I think that goes up there with like the butt fumble and a couple other of like the real legendary, just awful Jets plays. But like just the outright like ridiculous and absurdity of getting away with a fake punt and then doing it again like an 8-year-old playing Madden.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, like that I think is like the hallmark of a bad team that just the coaching is just so lost, because it's like it's almost like a cry for help. It's like a desperation play, like something that you do just because you think something needs to be done, but you don't know what else to do and you panic and you try to fake punt twice. Like you said, that's Madden level decision making.
Yeah, it was really bizarre and just reeked of desperation, but it was also just outright stupid. Is really what it was. It was just an outright stupid decision, and you're not going to get away with that twice. You were lucky to get away with it once. And, you know, these are all the things that I'm sure if you're a Jets fan, and I actually, Justin, I feel bad for Jets fans. I don't know if you do. I feel bad for them. But if you're a Jets fan, this is the stuff I'd be looking at saying, this guy's got to go.
100%. Look, I do feel bad for the Jets. I'm not going to lie. Look, when we had our little down spell over the last 5 years, and I knew that, you know, there really wasn't much prospects for us. You know, we kind of just had to wait it out and wait for things to turn around. I wasn't someone who was anti-Jets or Bills. I was actually kind of looking forward to seeing the Jets and Bills have a chance of success. I mean, I think back to a few years ago, Aaron Rodgers coming out on 9/11 with the American flag. Like, yeah. I said to myself, you know what? Like, I'm rooting for this team. I wanted the Bills fan base the Jets fan base to kind of get a chance to taste the success. And you know what? I mean, look, they had their shot. They had their window, and they've just gotten. The Jets, at least, have just gotten worse over time.
Well, the Jets really have never had their window. Like, I agree, like, rooting for the Bills a little bit when the Pats were in bad times. You know, you respect the Bills fans. They have great fans. You know, it was their time. You're kind of rooting for them. Hard luck losers. The Jets, I just can't root for those fans. I just feel like it's a different – I mean, I think their fans are like – they're more Neanderthalic than, like, any other group of fans. And, like, I just can't root for them. But it's also not their time. With the Jets, the only thing I'm rooting for is the fact that this Jets franchise, they have like a, I don't know, like a real penchant, a real tendency for these like signature moments of just like boobery and incompetence and just like, you know, just debauchery, bad play. And that's what you root to see with the Jets.
Yeah, they look, the Jets don't do anything to help themselves, right? But I mean, look, the Jets honestly haven't had, in my mind, I think a competent or at least a good coach since what? Would you say since Rex Ryan?
Perhaps. It's been that long. Yeah, it's been a long time like 15 years now, by the way.
Exactly. So, you know, you've gone 50. Yeah, that was right about the time, I think, too. You know, maybe a little later, but around the last time they had a franchise quarterback. Like, this team has gone about 15 years without having a legitimate head coach. And arguably, what, you want to go back to, like, Chad Pennington, maybe? Like, it's been at least...
I wouldn't call Sanchez a franchise quarterback.
That's kind of my point, right? Like, I never... So, like, you've gone about 20 years without a franchise quarterback, a good 15 years without a franchise coach.
You could argue that Sam Darnold was a franchise quarterback. I mean, I know you disrespect him, but the guy's won 13-plus games, 2 years in a row. He's proving he can win in this league. The Jets dragged him down. Like, it, you know what I mean? So is it the chicken or the egg is, I guess, my point.
Yeah. I mean, look, it was Sam Darnold. Don't forget too, Sam Darnold was starting in the NFL when he was like 19 years old. Right. So like, it's obviously, I mean, look, that's kind of a tall task, no matter what organization you're on. He might've just been one of those guys that needed, you know, time to kind of progress and develop into a legitimate quarterback. But the point is well taken. It wasn't going to happen with the Jets regardless.
Exactly. If you take Sam Darnold and you put him into a competent NFL franchise from day one, is he at least a good quarterback like he's showing he is in this league? And I think, you know, you'd have to question that. And maybe part of that is having the patience and the discipline and the organizational structure to be like, we're not throwing this guy to the wolves in year one because he's not ready yet. But what do? They threw him to the wolves and he got eaten alive, and it took him like years to rebuild. So did the Jets not have a franchise quarterback for 30 or 40 years, or did they just drag down and destroy everyone that comes within, you know, feet of that franchise because they're such a mess?
Yeah, well, the Jets to me are, you know, there's a couple of those franchises in the NFL, right? Like, you know, they're almost like a Browns, right? Where, you know, you look at the Jets and the Browns, I think, are just where talent like goes to die, right? It's like, it's where underachievement is like, it underachievement thrives and talent goes to die in those two organizations. And there's just, look, some organizations, they just can't figure it out. You question how serious they are in terms of like competing in being legit, but like they can't get out of their own way, the Jets. And look, at this point, I don't feel bad for them anymore. I really don't.
Well, look at how good the Joe Burrow is, right? And what have the Bengals won with him? You know, like how, I mean, they've won a little. Yeah, they made a Super Bowl, but like you put Joe Burrow on 20 other NFL franchises and that team's on a run. Yes. Right now, the Bengals drag him down. It's a similar thing. This is just some places, Jets, Bengals, Browns, Cardinals, where, you know, the sort of organization is just so rotted that I think that even when they draft the right guy, they drag him down.
I totally agree. And that's why, you know, you look at the Jets here with perhaps a golden opportunity. They're going to have a high draft pick. They have multiple. They got a lot of draft capital. They got two good tackles. They got Garrett Wilson. Like, they have a couple pieces that they could try to rebuild a franchise around. And you just can't help but think, like, even with the opportunity that's going to come to them over the next few years, that they're going to bundle this too completely.
Like they've done so many other times.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times have the Jets had a top five or a top seven pick in our lives and they can't figure it out? So you're right. Like they will most likely screw this up again. That's why they need to clean house and start fresh. Yep. All right. I got two more quick Pats takes for you, and then we're going to move to around the league. Number one, Justin, are you going to take medicine on Ramondre Stevenson? He looks good. You have been his biggest detractor.
I have.
He. This is maybe the best he's looked in his career.
Here's the thing. I'm not going to disagree with that. I will actually defend him and say that he's looked really good. He's looked quick. He's looked he's looked impactful. You know, both as a receiver and as a runner, and he's been reliable. Now, I'm not going to take my medicine just yet. because we still have a lot of football left and I'm still waiting. The games are only going to get more crucial and the stakes are only going to get higher from here on out, I should say. And I'm still not ready to rule out him having a big, costly mistake in a big moment. I hope
that
I
eat my words. That was going to be my next question to you. You've been predicting that big fumble for like 2 months now.
Yeah.
Knock wood. It hasn't come yet. You're still concerned.
I'm still very concerned. Yeah. To me, it's just like he's saving it for what could be the worst possible moment where there's no tomorrow. You know what I mean? Yeah. So
I mean, fumbling issues are really hard to get over. I've seen, like, definitely, I think, like, good example, Kevin Falk was a fumbler early in his career, and he kind of got over it. A lot of guys, most guys that have those kind of issues, they never fully, like, get over it. And, like, I agree with you. Like, I'm still concerned and waiting for, like, just the worst possible time for Stevenson to cough one up.
Me too. But you know what I do think is helping that? And I don't think it's just a coincidence. And I'm hoping to eat my words because I'm hoping it doesn't become a problem the rest of this year and into the playoffs. The rise of Travion Henderson, Ramondre Stevenson 1,000%. Has not had to be a bell cow back, right? Like he has not had to bear the brunt of everything, both in terms of expectations and in terms of snap count. And I think that's done wonders for him.
Yeah, it has. And there's no question about it. Like, they don't have to rely on this guy to touch the ball 20 to 30 times a game. And I think that makes a big difference, because I think what we've seen Stevenson at his worst, it is when he is being relied on heavily.
Yeah. And I don't think it's a coincidence either. I know he's the fumble problems kind of, you know, loom over his entire career, but there's no question that even at the beginning, when he was kind of Damian Harris's, you know, backup, that's when he kind of looked his best for us, I think, right? And then we ship Damian Harris out of town. He takes the brunt of the workload. He starts to look worse and worse and worse, right? And now the pendulum is swinging back in the other direction. Now that you got a Travion Henderson who's making meaningful plays and taking meaningful snaps. So I think this is, I'm not going to say that he won't make another big mistake at some point this year or in future seasons, because I do think he will. But I think the recipe for success with Ramondre Stevenson is supplementing him with somebody else who's
calm. It's like 10 to 15 touches a game. That's what I think. Yeah. I think that's the sweet spot for him. You know, you can't rely on this guy 30 times carries a game. He's not that kind of back, and he'll cough the ball up.
Exactly.
All right, so we're going to segue to around the league, and I thought we could bring up one more topic as kind of a nice way to do it, and that is, let's talk about the coach a little bit. Let's talk about Mike Vrabel. And what I want to ask you is Mike Vrabel, Justin, the coach of the year in the NFL? Because one of the funny things about a topsy-turvy league and like this year being a topsy-turvy year is I could literally rattle off 5 or 6 names right now that I could legitimately say that's the coach of the year. I mean, there are literally 5 or 6 easy arguments to be made. So Vrabel probably deserves to be coach of the year, but that doesn't mean he's going to win it given the situation. Will Mike Vrabel win coach of the year?
You know, look, that's really tough to say. I think personally, I think he should, right? But it's very easy to point, like you just said, it's very easy to, you know, to bring up the Liam Cohens in the world and the what's his name in Chicago, whose name's escaping me at the moment.
Ben Johnson.
Ben Johnson. You know, and a few others. Like, there are some real legitimate contenders. I think Vrabel should win it, just because I think he's had arguably the most drastic turnaround. But will I be shocked if he doesn't win it? No, I won't be shocked.
I mean, I think he has his long odds to win it. I really do, because look, Ben Johnson, Liam Cohen. Yeah. How about Kyle Shanahan, right? Mm-hmm. Look what Kyle Shanahan's done in San Francisco.
Yeah.
You've got Sean Payton. Does anyone even talk about Sean Payton? The guy in Seattle, Mike McDonald, right? There's 5 guys right there that have taken terrible situations and put their teams to the top of the NFL.
Yeah.
Mike Vrabel. Let's not forget what we're talking about here. We're talking about a guy that took over a franchise that won 4 games back-to-back years and was a total freaking mess inside and outside the locker room, on the field and off it, fixed it, developed an MVP quarterback, and won 14 wins, improved his win total by 10 wins. So I know there's a lot of good candidates out there, but I really think you'd be hard-pressed to say that any one of those guys did more in 1 year than Mike Vrabel did.
Yeah, and that's kind of my point too, is, you know, I mean, I think that, again, an argument can be made for any of those guys. And actually, Kyle Shanahan, I think, is a great one because, you know, I was watching the Bears game last night, the Bears and 49ers. And, you know, the 49ers, what I really got to say I respect about them is the fact that, you know, we all thought their window was closed. That's something I'll take medicine on. Now they're competing for the number one overall seed in the NFC, right? But, you know, you look at what happened to that team. They lost their Hufanga and Greenlaw, their defensive end and their safety. They go over to Denver. Then in the middle of at the beginning of the season, they lose their all pro middle linebacker. They lose Bosa. Debo is shipped out of town. Brandon Ayuk never comes back. George Kittle's been in and out of the lineup. I mean, the list of injuries, you name it. Their quarterback, Brock Purdy's been hurt. He took Mac Jones. I mean, you might even make a case that he's done the most patchwork this year. So I think he's a sneaky, you know, candidate, but I agree. I think Vrabel has kind of done the biggest turnaround from last year to this year, with what he has. And so I'd like to see Vrabel win it, but I'll respect if somebody else wins it.
I'd like to see Vrabel win it. I think he should win it. I think the only other name on that list that, you know, I could live with winning it and say, okay, would be Shanahan, Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah.
The other ones have all done great, but I just think they maybe had a little more to work with than Vrabel has had. So, you know, but Shanahan, I mean, that team has gotten decimated by injuries and they're still like, you know, I mean, they're going to sneak into that number one seed. No, we barely talked about the 49ers all this year. Whole year.
Yep.
You know, we both thought they would have it down here. You thought they would miss the playoffs. I said they would be maybe above 500, but not a playoff team.
Yep.
Here they are, one home win away from the number one seed in the NFC.
Yeah, it is actually, it's kind of mind blowing. It's very impressive. I'll tell you, I'm still not super scared of them in terms of, like, I don't think they're going to emerge from the NFC into the Super Bowl. I really don't, but yeah. I have to respect them for what they've been able to do. They are a legit team.
Their defense is terrible. That was bad defense last night against the Bears. That was bad, bad defensive football. All right, let's look at this AFC playoff field and NFC playoff field a little bit, Justin. AFC season ends today. Broncos 1, Pats 2, Jags 3, Steelers 4, Texans 5, Chargers 6, Bills 7. The season ends today. Buffalo is at New England. Hate that matchup for the Pats, too. But the good news is it's super unlikely that's going to hold up because it would require the Bills losing to the Jets and the Chargers losing to the Broncos and a couple other things. So I think the far and away the most likely scenario is the Pats are either going to get the Jaguars or the Chargers here if they don't get the number one seed. I think the Patriots are going to get the number one seed, Justin. I think they take care of business at home against Miami. And I think the Chargers will go in and beat Denver, a team that just finds themselves in so many close games. And I just feel like their luck is starting to run out a little bit. I feel like, you know, Herbert, you know, you just don't know what you're going to get from him. But if you get the good Justin Herbert, he can beat you on any given Sunday. And I just have a feeling the Chargers win this game and the Pats walk away with that number one seed. But your thoughts on this AFC playoff field, Justin?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's wide open right now. I think no matter what happens next week in that Chargers-Broncos game, I think it's arguably the two best outcomes for us, right? You either get the number one seed, you get the bye, you get an extra week to heal that beaten up roster. Or if the Broncos hold and they win that game, then the Chargers are coming to you, which I think is bar none the easiest first round matchup you could hope to have in the playoffs. So I think no matter what, we're actually in a pretty good situation, whether you take the bye or you get the Chargers coming. I will say
any stock, Justin, you put any stock in the fact that the Chargers kicked the shit out of the Patriots last year?
No, zero.
Same here. Zero.
Zero.
That was
mailed.
Done.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not worried about that whatsoever. I do think, you know, I will say that this Bills team does still scare me. The Texans scare me, right? Arguably the two teams that scare me the most. You know, I know we talk about the Broncos and playing in Mile High and that can be tough. But personally, I think the two teams that I'm the most afraid of are the Bills and the Texans. I mean, look, the Bills obviously are, they just seem kind of like a team of destiny. You know, this is like their year. The sea is parted, you know, their path to a Super Bowl. I think while they're not, you know, a division winner, they won't go through Buffalo. I still think that, they're in the best possible scenario. I mean, they don't have to go up against Mahomes. They don't have to go up against Burrow. Probably won't have to go up against Lamar. So for them, you know, this is the best opportunity they've had, I think, in the Josh Allen era. And then, you know, you look at the Texans, and I got to say that Texans defense, that's like, you know, we haven't talked about them a ton, but that's the best, you know, one of the best defenses in the NFL. That is a terrifying defense to go up against. I mean, the Texans are hot right now. I believe they've won 8 games in a row, something like that. 9 out of their last 10. So the Bills and the Texans are the two teams that scare me the most, even more so than the Broncos.
I agree with that. I agree. The Texans are a frightening team. The defense is frightening. I think the quarterback is playing much better now. Like, there was a point in this year where I was thinking Davis Mills might be their best option. Yep. And I think that right now CJ Stroud is actually definitely looking more like the guy we saw in his rookie year two years ago, more and more. And that kind of does make the Texans scary. Nico Collins is an absolute beast, by the way. I mean, that guy's a nightmare for any defense. So, you know, I think this is a strong playoff field. It's a lot of new teams, but I don't think it's a weak field. I mean, you're talking about a year where if a team had won 10 games as a wild card, like the Steelers, you know, the Ravens, one of those teams is getting in. But like, if there was a team in this conference that had won 10 games, they wouldn't be making the playoffs this year. I mean, which is kind of unusual, right? Yep. So this is a strong field, a lot of good teams. The other thing I'll say about this field, and this goes for the NFC too, is because this is such a wide open race, like you want to get the highest seed possible. Yep. If you're Buffalo or you're the Chargers or you're the Texans, you want to get the highest seed possible because this could be one of those years where you have like 6-5 for the conference championship game. So I think every piece of seeding counts in this field.
Yeah, it totally does. And again, I think, you know, that's kind of why I say that this first round is actually playing out favorable for us, because for a while it looked like we were destined to face either the Bills or the Texans in that first round. And that, I think, would have just been getting the short end of the stick right there. I mean, that would have been a real tough draw for the number two seed, because I think those are the two teams you got to worry about most. So I'm very confident that whether we get the bye and we head to the divisional round, or whether we get the Chargers coming here, we beat them and head to the divisional round. All in all, I think that the Patriots are actually setting themselves up fairly well, no matter what happens.
I 1,000% agree. All right, let's look at the NFC field. Right now, if the season ended today, Seattle number one, Bears number two, Eagles three, the Panthers actually number four, 49ers five, Rams six, and the Packers seven. Again, strong field. I'll tell you a couple things that jump out about me about the NFC playoff picture. Number one is, all year long we were saying the Rams were the best team in the conference, and they have almost no shot. I think it's like a 5% or less chance to actually win that number one seed. They blew that game in Seattle a few weeks ago, and it might seal their fate because now they're going to have to win 3 road games to make it to the Super Bowl. And then the other thing that jumps out at me, we already talked about the Niners, but the Packers and the way that this was considered, you know, they made that big move for Micah Parsons, supposed to be a young up-and-coming team backing into the playoffs and really lucky to have that 7 seed.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, that opening week, you know, they came out and they throttled the Lions and, you know, they had a really good showing. Then they made that Micah Parsons trade. And I think everybody said, whoa, this is the team to watch out for in the NFC. This is an early Super Bowl favorite. Right now, I don't think there's a chance they emerge out of the NFC. I think I think they could probably be a one and done. I'll tell you the team that has my eye and my vote of confidence right now, and I'm going to contradict what we talked about last week and the last podcast, but I'm back in the Eagles. I am. Yeah. And it's and the reason is because, not because I think the offense is above average or the offense has fixed their problems, but that defense is back to being a Super Bowl caliber defense. I mean, you know, I was watching them against the Bills. They're fully healthy now. They have everybody back from injury. They're firing on all cylinders. They pretty much shut the Bills out for three quarters in Buffalo. I mean, they don't need their offense to be great to go out there and emerge from the NFC and potentially win a Super Bowl. I think they're going to ride that defense right back into an NFC championship.
I see the Eagles more as a tough out, and it's for the reason you said. They have a terrific defense. Terrific, that offense is really bad. And in the playoffs, at some point, you're going to have to score points. You know, the Eagles had 7 passing yards in the second half of that game. And I don't care what the weather was. I don't care where they were playing. I don't care who they were playing. 7 passing yards, that's a pathetic total. So, and this has not been a one-week thing. This has been a 4 to 6 week trend with this team. So, yes, the defense is amazing. Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis, unbelievable. They're going to be a tough out for someone, but at some point they're going to have to rely on that offense. And that's why I just can't say that they're going to make it out of the NFC.
Well, the NFC is certainly wide open, right? And I mean, both conferences are wide open at this point. Like that's one of the things, you know, you talk about parity in the NFL. This is, as far as I can remember, the most wide open the NFL has been heading into the playoffs in a long time. And the playoff fields are strong.
And you've got some teams in the NFC that can really score points. You know, like the Rams, the Niners, the Bears, even the Seahawks.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, I feel like even typically, you know, you look at the playoff fields in years of past and you say, you know, there's one or two teams in there that were lucky to get in and they don't actually deserve to be there because they're not one of the 7 best teams in the conferences. But this year, the NFC and the AFC, top to bottom, 1 through 7, those are strong teams. So I really do think this is anybody's year. And it's really going to, you know, come down to who gets hot at the right time, who can stay healthy. And that can be anybody at this point.
Yeah, it totally can. You know, even I look at that Bears team and, you know, you talk about taking medicine, like the dose of my medicine that Caleb Williams is giving me is increasing every week because he just looks better and better. I still don't think he's as good as Drake May. I still don't think he's the football Jesus that he was predicted to be. But what I will say, he's a very good quarterback and he's been super productive with Ben Johnson, who's done just an amazing job of building that offense with great players, Luther Burden, DeAndre Swift, the running back from Northwestern, they have the tight end from Michigan. I mean, that team is stacked offensively and they can score points. So, you know, that's another team that, you know, look, do I love them? No, because their defense is pathetic. Every single one of these teams is flawed, but the Bears offense, you know, I think they could beat anyone if they get hot.
And I mean, realistically, they have, like, they've beaten some really good teams, right? So, I think that NFC is wide open. If you're trying to suss out the best team top to bottom, I think it probably still is the Rams, right? And the Rams actually, even though they have the worst chance in their division to win the division, they actually, according to the sports books, have the best odds to win the NFC right now.
Interesting.
So Vegas still likes the Rams, no matter where they fall.
Well, I'll say this: there's absolutely no home field advantage to speak of for the Rams because when they play at home, it's more than half opposition fans, anyways.
Yeah.
So maybe it doesn't matter too much whether the Rams are home or not.
Right. Exactly. So yeah, I think they're still a team to look out for, but really, they've all proven that they can be dangerous in this NFC playoff picture.
The one last thing I'll say is the Buccaneers, right? Like, that was a team that looked like a really good team, top of the conference team, and that they have just absolutely fallen off the face of the planet.
I mean, they should be embarrassed. Like, they lost 3 straight divisional games. They lost to the Saints, the Falcons, and the Panthers back-to-back-to-back weeks. And then they had a chance to go out against Miami and right the ship in Miami.
Against Quinn Ewers.
It's Quinn Ewers in Miami. And the Dolphins kind of, you know, fed them their teeth. So it doesn't make any sense to me because this Buccaneers team is actually like healthy now. Like, they have Mike Evans and Jalen McMillan back. Like, their offensive line is healthy. Bucky Irving's healthy again. Their defense is pretty healthy. Like, I think it's Baker. I think Baker is the one who's struggling right now, either with injuries or I don't know what it is, but Baker has looked awful. But it doesn't make any sense. There's no rhyme or reason for why this Bucs team is taking the skid that they have.
I mean, there was a few weeks ago, we were saying Baker Mayfield might be the MVP.
Yeah.
And now look, I mean, you know, he's ice cold, but I think Mayfield is, he's just like, I think he's one of these guys that's really streaky. He gets hot and then he gets cold. We've seen that throughout his career, but yeah. Right now he is ice cold. That team is ice cold. And they're playing Panthers this week for the division title. I plan to go to that game, by the way, because I'll be in Disney World next week. So yeah. I'm hoping to get there on Saturday afternoon. But, you know, the fact that Tampa Bay is even in that position and is really a huge indictment on what's happened there over the last 6 weeks.
I agree. And you know what? Look, at this point, I actually would rather the Panthers win and make the playoffs. Look, the Panthers are a team that nobody's talked about all year. They really have nobody to speak of in terms of talent. You know, they got a couple guys, but you know, that's, you wouldn't call them a stacked roster by any means, but they've just found ways to be tough and competitive. Like, you know, they lost to the Seahawks, but they played them pretty competitive this past week. They went out and they beat the Rams. You know, they'd beaten the Packers. They had won some really tough games this year, and they found ways down the stretch to come up big. So I'm hoping that they beat Tampa Bay and get in the playoffs. I think that'd be very interesting.
It would be good to see some a new face in there for sure. All right. And then the last thing I want to talk about before we wrap up this episode is the Bills-Eagles game yesterday. And I thought of you because I know you've been a critic of Sean McDermott in Buffalo for the last couple of years. I think you thought Bill Belichick was going to replace him a couple of times. He's hanging on to that job. You know, that was, I thought, a reckless decision to go for two at the end of the game. I get it. I get why they did it. I just don't agree with it. I sat there watching the failed two-point conversion, which, by the way, the guy was wide open, and Allen missed the throw.
Yeah.
I sat there watching that play, and I said, did Sean McDermott kind of seal his fate? Like, if the Bills don't go on a playoff run this year, I feel like this is going to be a watershed moment for him, and this might be the thing that kind of tips the scales towards them moving on from him.
Well, I didn't understand the call at all. I get what you're thinking. You're like, look, you know, you're playing well in the second half. You know, you want to end it right there. You got the momentum. But by the same token, I think those are all arguments for why you go to overtime. I mean, you would just score it. I think like 10 unanswered points. You clearly, wow, you know,
two touchdowns.
Yeah, sorry, 12. Yeah, you scored 12 unanswered points.
Excuse me. And you got stopped at the goal line. Don't forget that. The Bills drove up the field three times
in the
second half of that game. They were moving the ball.
Right. So, yeah, I thought that, you know, was a clear play for overtime type of scenario. But McDermott made an aggressive in crazy call. I mean, look, if it worked out, we'd all be standing there going, oh, what a gutsy call. You know, Bills come back and win a thriller as time expires. And now we're sitting here saying, you know, hey, that was a stupid call. I think no matter what, it's a stupid call in that scenario. Yeah. But you're right. It's one of those things that it could definitely leave a bad taste in the organization's mouth come time to, you know, making a decision. And I'll be completely honest, I think Sean McDermott's at the point now where it's Super Bowl or bust for his career. I think if they don't win a Super Bowl, they need to move on from him.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if I'd go that far, but I think he needs to make a real run. If the Bills go one and done in the playoffs this year, I think he's really in trouble. For a guy that's winning, you know, 11, 12 games a year, it just feels like he hasn't taken them to that next level, and it's almost time to change things up. You know, I've sat here all day and I've tried to make sense of that call and try to defend it. I don't agree with the call. I think it was a huge mistake, and I said it beforehand. For a lot of reasons, you know, you move the ball up and down the field on the Eagles in the second half. You drove the field three times, got stopped at the goal line, scored two touchdowns. Jalen Hurts only threw for 7 yards. I mean, the Bills defense was playing really good. So to me, yeah, you play for overtime there. But I'm just wondering, I'm trying to make sense of it. And I'm wondering if maybe because Allen was hurt and maybe because they know the Patriots had won and they realized the game was probably not likely to be that important. Maybe they just felt like that was better for them to just put it all out there and not go play another 25 plays in overtime with their injured quarterback. I don't know, but that's all I can really come up with.
Yeah. I mean, regardless of the logic, you know, it was one of those things that it's not cut and dry. It's questionable no matter how you look at it, right? Whether you fall on one side or the other, I don't think there's, you know, but I mean, look, from my standpoint, as soon as I saw that ball fall incomplete, you know, I said, oh, thank God. Thank God that they did something so stupid, because now, you know, as Patriots fans, we're sitting here locking up the AFC East. And you know what? Good. I'm glad, because I think something like that too, you know, as someone who's rooting against the Bills now at this point. I hope maybe that's something that maybe that ripples through the locker room. Maybe that causes a little bit of internal strife. Maybe the players are a little, you know, pissed off about that decision. Maybe Josh Allen isn't happy. Maybe the coach and maybe the coaching staff is at odds with each other. I don't know. I'm just hoping.
What puzzles me about that, you're looking for the hidden thing in the locker room, but can I throw something else at you, which is that, you know, look, that's a throw Josh Allen hits 200 times out of 201 times. I mean, that's an easy throw for any NFL quarterback, especially an MVP. He misses that throw. Was it bad luck? Was it one of those things? Or is he really hurt? Could he not plant his foot? And I think that if you're looking for some sign that maybe things aren't going well or aren't going to go well for Buffalo in the postseason, maybe the health of the quarterback is a big issue.
Totally. I mean, look, that is a team that lives and dies by Josh Allen's ability to be dominant. So if he's not at 100% health, that is going to be very tough for the Bills moving forward.
They're not a very good team besides Josh Allen. They're really not. So if he's hurt and he can't be Superman, and I think one of the reasons that the Eagles defense looks so good on Sunday is because Josh Allen couldn't quite move like he usually does.
Yeah, well, he certainly didn't look too mobile, right?
Yeah, 100%. He did not. He was. I felt like he was limited. He couldn't do the things he usually does. All right, my man. Anything else you want to add? Any other topics you want to bring up before we wrap up this episode of the Ultimate Patriots Dr. Football Podcast?
No, I think that's. I think that's about it. I think we're all Chargers fans in New England here for the next week, and we'll see. It would just be so fitting, I think, for this team to, after everything they've accomplished this year, everything they've done, to wind up back in that number one spot. And again, we've said this before, but just with how banged up this team is, how great would it be to give everyone an extra week off to get healthy?
100%. And I think, you know, unlike a lot of these teams, a lot of these, short of Matt Collins, a lot of these guys are going to be back for the postseason for the Pats. And I think Milton Williams and Will Campbell could be playing right now.
I agree.
If the schedule wasn't so easy coming into the final 2 weeks.
Yep.
All right, my friend, I want to thank everyone that listened, took the time. Please find us on Facebook, Instagram, hit us up, send us messages, comment, like, share all our stuff. Wishing you all a safe, happy, and healthy new year. Please stay out of trouble. Enjoy it. And we'll catch you next week with another episode of the Dr. Football Ultimate Patriots Podcast.